What is your killer strategy? The one that gives your business the ultimate bulletproof competitive advantage. Welcome to Your Advantage Play with your host, Joel Block. Former professional blackjack player and card counter who left Las Vegas and spent his life in that giant casino on Wall Street in the hedge fund and venture capital businesses. And now, here's your host, Joel Block.
What could possibly motivate a successful surgeon to leave his medical practice, to invent a product, and move into entrepreneurship? We'll hear from Dr. Jeff Kleiner about how he financed it, and how he works every day to pull it off. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Joel. Pleasure to meet you. Let me start off with a question.
Well, hold on. Let me just first say sure. that, man, you must have some courage to leave a steady, solid deal like that. I mean, most people dream about moving into entrepreneurship. Just real quick, just tell us about that. How did that happen for you?
Yeah, it was a gradual process. This was not something where I kind of jumped right into it. What happened during my practice was I had a whole bunch of different ideas about the way that things could make my life easier and easier for my patients. And by the time I started this company, I had about 40 issued patents and 5 different medical device silos. So the underlying reason for why I started this company was, quite frankly, frustration. I became infuriated by being handcuffed by the devices, by the systems that industry offered me. They just didn't make any sense.
All right. So just for imprint, so you're an orthopedic surgeon, or you were at least, or maybe you still are, I don't know. And then you developed some spinal fusion technologies that other surgeons now are using in the operating room. That's what we're talking about here today.
That's correct.
Okay. Were you one of those kids that played with Erector sets and everything?
You know, I did, but I really was interested in making things go. And so I would take, you know, rubber bands or whatever happened to be and make a Tinker Toy Erector set hybrid, be able to go down the street or be able to mobilize in my basement.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, so you got Tinker Toys to move with rubber bands. I'd shoot rubber bands at other kids and watch them run go. I don't know. I was a little different than that. But so anyway, listen, so you're a surgeon. Did the ideas for some of these things just come to you during the surgeries while like, boy, there sure could be a better way to do this? Or how did that happen for you? Because, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are listening and they're thinking, man, I got a lot of ideas, but I just don't even know where to start.
Yeah. So, you know, I would be aggravated by how this darn thing, which is supposed to work differently, at least it does on the, you know, the videos and what the rep tells you, and it doesn't. And so at night I would be, you know, getting ready to go to sleep. And then it would come to me a different type of strategy. And I'm a simple person. I don't have a huge engineering background, but there are such simple solutions to some of these major problems. And it just became a matter, for example, of instead of having something that was round and end dispensing, you know, which is like a funnel, and changing it to something which was rectangular and side dispensing on both sides. So you double the amount of volume that you can eject, for example, and you can take advantage of the increase in the area that you're able to use in order to get materials through. So again, I don't mean to make it sound like it's something incredibly complicated. This is just a matter of changing the shape of something and changing the exit zones to that shape.
You know, I have to imagine that you're a small time guy, you got a little company and you're working on making it happen, but you're going to war with these giant pharmaceutical medical manufacturing companies that have giant distribution centers and they're moving product through all sorts of ways. I mean, this industry is kind of locked down pretty hard. How do you even begin to break in?
it's hard. And it's something that you start off naive. You think that, gosh, I've got a great idea. It's years ahead of everyone else's. I'm going to, get this great device out on the market. And the fact is, and that's kind of the cold, hard truth, is that those companies want nothing to do with you. Unless you eat their lunch, they are going to ignore you. And so you have to look at that as an opportunity, and you have to find places where your system will fit in. And then it just becomes a groundswell. And that's, we're in the process of that. I wish the groundswell was happening right this second. But what's going on is kind of a gradual recognition that this is a superior way of doing things because of all the advantages that it offers.
So it is. Is what you created, is it like a revolutionary thing that changes everything, or is it just a small tweak that makes it a little better? And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, understand. What I'm thinking about from a strategic point of view, is this something that knocks the other players out of the box, or would it be better for them to have it, but if they don't have it, it's not that big of a deal?
I think it's somewhere in between. This is a process which is far upstream compared to where everyone else's devices and systems are. But can you do without it? Absolutely. People have been doing these kinds of procedures with a hammer and a chisel for a long time. So this offers a bunch of advantages, and it's a matter of that being recognized by surgeons, hospitals, and by potential strategic partners.
So just real quick, without getting in very technical, just tell us what it is. What's the thing that we're talking about here?
Sure. So, let me just start at the kind of the beginning. Most people have no idea when you say spine fusion, they don't know what that is. And except to know that it's time to run, because I don't want one of these. Thank you very much. So a spine fusion is a procedure where vertebra are locked together in order to eliminate or reduce painful motion, or eliminate problems related to instability where the spine bones move inappropriately, or to assist with other types of things like infections or tumors. So those are the main reasons to do this operation, because unlike total joint replacement, which is a possibility in spine as well, this is something to help with intractable type of pain. So that's the main reason to do one of these operations. And part of the operation is being able to have the bones heal together like a fracture. And in order to do so, you have to incorporate bone graft, which is kind of the glue that holds the bones together. So that's kind of the background behind.
So what part did you improve?
So the thing that has been a constant nuisance for everyone has been, especially in minimally invasive types of operations, to be able to operate through a tube and introduce this bone graft, this glue, into the target area, into the disc space. That's a thing which was a frustration for every doctor that does these operations. And what I've done is figured out a way to eliminate that particular problem.
So, what are some of the hurdles you had to jump over? So in terms of getting this, so, a couple of them, just, I would imagine there's some insurance issues. I would imagine that there are distribution issues. There are regulatory issues. And what are some of the big things that you've had to deal with?
It's interesting that you ask. It turns out that the things that I thought were going to be a challenge, like FDA clearance, going through some of the laboratory types of strategies and having disappointments on the way, those were not issues. Those were relatively easy because it's a pretty simple product. The biggest challenge for new companies like mine is how to deal with hospital systems that don't want new products. They want to decrease the number of vendors that are in their midst And they want to make certain that they are racing to the bottom as far as reimbursement rates are concerned. So dealing with those things has probably been the biggest challenge that we face.
So if the hospitals don't want to buy it, does the doctor have a lot of influence over what the hospital buys? Can they tell the hospital, I don't want to work here if you don't have this kind of equipment?
Once again, Joel, great question. And the answer is that used to be the case. When I was in practice, absolutely, I wielded a lot of power. Nowadays, most doctors are employed physicians. And so they have to obey what their boss, the hospital, says they do. So if the hospital says, hey, you have to use product X, we've got a cheap contract with them, that's what you do. And as a small company, you try and find physician champions, surgeon champions, and ask them to, hey, you know, please go up against your value added committee and tell them that this is something that will benefit you and your patients. And what ends up happening is the doctor has to provide a brief description to someone upstream who, you know, maybe a nurse practitioner, for example, and whose goal primarily is to say no. And she takes that, again, with the idea being that I'm going to show this to the value added committee and we'll get back to you. So the doctor is now, in today's world, removed from that equation. So there's a couple ways around that. You go to rural communities where there's not these huge hospital systems. And everyone knows the name. I won't mention them, but there are a number of them, and they get fewer as they gobble each other up. Or you go to ambulatory surgery centers, which is the place where most people want their surgeries done now. And it's the fastest growing arena in the medical community for doing surgery.
Those tend to be owned by doctors.
That's correct. That's right. So they're going to be interested in the most efficient way of doing things, things that save time, prevent complications, don't rely heavily on infrastructure, and make their lives easier as far as doing the operation, where they don't have to have expensive technicians to help them assemble a device that then needs to be put into the patient.
You know, I would imagine if these hospitals, you know, just are thinking about the bottom line, and they don't want to change, and doctors are now corporate employees rather than independent practitioners, which is becoming more and more common. I would imagine that the flip side of that, the way you get a hospital to move, is by introducing legal issues where attorneys say that the old method caused a problem and they should have used a new method, because the new method wouldn't have had, if you did the new method, if you weren't so cheap, my client would have a better outcome. So you understand what I'm saying?
I do. It's a great idea. And in order to afford something like that, I mean, if you're going to have to sue some of these giant companies who have,
I'm not even talking about suing,
right?
I'm talking about looking at other lawsuits where the lawyer said that you doing your technique caused a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because, and then you say, listen, there's a better technique that doesn't cause these problems. And I mean, I just wonder if that's a different way to address the same issue.
I think it's one way to address that issue, and I think that it would be effective. You are battling Goliath, and it takes a lot of money and a lot of courage in order to do that. I, for one, would be delighted to speak with any attorneys listening as to how to approach that. And I would be excited to get behind that, because it's unfair to the patients and unfair to the physicians to have the situation that it is right now. It's dominated by systems which are just not the best for healthcare.
Well, I would imagine that you've got plenty of courage, if not plenty of money. So at least you got one of the two under control, huh?
Well, it's either a courage or being foolish.
Sometimes we're too foolish to know. That's the state of entrepreneurs. So where did you get this idea? What were the steps that you went through in product development? How did you bring this thing to life? How'd that happen?
Well, you know, Joel, I made some mistakes, I have to admit. I started off with a device, which I thought was fantastic. It was made out of plastic. It was inexpensive to make, and easily passed through kind of the scrutiny of regulatory systems, the FDA, for example. My mistake was that I made it for me. It worked great in my hands, and I was able to use it on in my patients with tremendous success, but it didn't have a lot of market acceptance because I did not ask my colleagues, hey, is this going to work for you in the way that you do the operation? So with that lesson learned, I then was able to successfully introduce a system that really works well and works well in everyone's hands. So that was a 4-year learning curve and a lot of punches in the nose and recognizing that I had failed. But this new system, this new strategy incorporated all those lessons learned. So in order to do that, it took a bit more money. And for that, I went to friends and family. I went to a couple of angel groups, went through crowdfunding, and then used what I had been saved up for my retirement and for my family to help fill in the runway. So it was a combination of those things.
So you've really gone to every kind of capital that's not professional. You've kind of been to all the different kinds of typical capital. Can you tell us how much money you've raised? You know, where are you so far?
Yeah, so the total that has been raised by my company is about $8.8 million.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is, except if you take a look at companies that have products which they're trying to produce in the medical device company. And we looked at this on some of the pitch types of companies. It's over $30 million.
Yeah.
So we've been able to do this in a very economical and conservative way.
I'm not saying that you spent a lot. I'm saying that you've raised a lot. I mean, it's hard to raise that much money for a small company. So you've done very well. And the angel groups who are typically, you know, kind of buddy-buddy with the professional money, the venture capital money and so forth, are they pushing you to, you know, get to the next level? Are they creating some pressure for you, or how's that going?
I am pushing us to do that. We need money in order to scale, and we have a series of pipeline products that I would love to be able to develop. So I would tell you that our first goal is to assemble a sales team with young, aggressive people who are interested in a reward and reward motivation for their success. So that's our primary thing. That's what we
want. What do you want them to sell? Selling the product?
Yeah. So the system that that we have, this KG2 system is what it's called, is a perfect item as an entree to a doctor's office. And that's what I want them to sell. This is a system which simplifies the way in which doctors do spinal fusion operations, and it's ideal for ambulatory surgery centers or for hospitals in, once again, a rural community that don't have a lot of time, energy, or money to spend on central supply and sterile processing departments.
And so they don't need to sterilize because it's a single-use product?
That's correct.
So it comes in a package, they open the package, they use the product, they throw it away when it's done, and then next surgery, they get a new one and start over again.
That's right.
Yeah. Is that kind of the direction that things are going these days?
More and more. You know, the challenge with reusable instruments, particularly if they're like a funnel, for example, it's really hard to clean. It's time intensive. You can't just put it through a dishwasher because you have debris that's left inside that long cylindrical funnel that you can't clean. And that, for example, ends up being responsible for a number of shutdowns that we see. One of the hospitals in the Denver community shut down for 6 months because of that very problem with either viral diseases or bacterial diseases. You know, we've heard about the VA hospital, for example, and the difficulty that they have had with their sterile processing departments. These are issues which are substantial and severe. So this obviates one of those problems and eliminates one of the patient safety issues with reusable types of devices.
I would imagine that hospitals like it too, because it limits their liability. It kind of reduces the transference of germs and different kinds of problems. Seems like it would be smart.
It is, and it gets rid of some of the most tedious work in sterile processing, and that is cleaning these instruments. Now, it does create another issue, and that is, what do you do with these products? Do they go into the waste dump? I have children. I'm really interested in making certain that their world isn't polluted because of things that I've done. One of the things that we're really interested in doing is being able to recycle some of these devices. And it'd be very simple to do. Once again, it takes some money, but it's a process where we can make it an entity which pays for itself, if not becomes a revenue source.
But that's a whole different company, I would imagine. Yeah. Yeah. So what's next for you? How are you going to go about raising more capital, getting to scale, hiring more people? How are you going to do those things? What's the plan?
Well, right now we're in the process of trying to find that person or those people that can help us to scale our sales. We've had success. Market acceptance is there. Doctors love this. It's a sticky type of product. They keep using it. But it's hard if you've got one person who's going via email from one part of the country to the next. So what we'd be interested in is primarily having someone who's done this in the spine market before and is interested in participating in the company from a stakeholder type of scenario. So we're in the process of finding someone like that. Then the next thing that I'd like to do is be able to gain a larger foothold in the ambulatory surgery center market. As I mentioned, it's one which is really primed for growth. People are wanting their procedures done more and more there and away from sick people that happen to be in the hospital. The next thing I'd like to do, again, I mentioned to you that I've got all of this intellectual property. I would love to be able to develop it. I've got, you know, prototypes designed and trialed in cadaver labs with some of these systems. And I've seen them work extraordinarily well. And once again, this is something that makes the life of patients and surgeons that much better. So those are really the three things that I would like to be able to do. And the goal then, the exit would either be an acquisition by one of the strategic partners that we're currently in conversation with, or to grow this company and dismantle them because we're so successful.
Do you think that that operating this company over the long run is kind of a real possibility? I mean, it sounds like you're kind of selling an add-on. You know, you're not selling. It's not the whole. There must be other equipment that they use in this process. So you're selling one component. You probably would be successful operating it for a while, and then somebody's going to just say, "We're going to buy you."
That's right, and I think that's really, for someone that doesn't know the spinal surgical space, you've hit the nail on the head. We have our bag does not have all of the equipment that's necessary, so you can either join up with companies that need your complementary unique device, or large companies, the big four medical device companies would say, you know, we would really like to have this as part of our armamentarium, and you share your system with us, and we can share our distribution network with you. So those are exactly the strategies which can help propel this into a large, successful company.
Yeah. You know, talking about, you know, selling makes me think about valuation. How did you value the company as you were raising money? as you know, how did you think about that? Mm-hmm. Because this is something that many entrepreneurial people don't get right.
So the first thing that that we did was started off with, and again, valuation is particularly in the early stages is more of an art than a science.
Highly subjective.
Yes. And so we came up with, we thought was going to make sense. That was the valuation, which was granted to the original investors. It became a different story once we went into the crowdsourcing market based upon comparables with other companies, which had a technology which they may or may not have released, but had intellectual property protection or had passed through the FDA as far as acceptance was concerned. There's lots and lots of companies like that. And so we're able to parlay that information along with, okay, well, now we've released this product. We've actually done a launch. We've reached a certain milestone. And based upon that and what the crowdsourcing avenue allowed, we were able to come up with what seemed like a pretty favorable valuation for the company.
Have you been escalating that number as you go along, as you hit milestones or as you accomplish things?
You know, our sales have kind of reached a plateau, and so we've not, and it's because we can't scale because we don't have the sales force to do it. So the consequence is that number has remained pretty flat for the last year.
Tell me about your sales. Do you have much sales? I mean, how are you doing?
Yeah, you know, it could always be more, but in order to have more, we have to have more people knocking on doors or helping to deal with some of the hurdles that we have with hospitals. And it's a very long sales cycle. Again, something that I didn't realize, and it's changed over the last 5 years or so as there's been consolidation of vendorships and reduction in the number of people that are allowed in the doors of hospitals. So it makes it a challenge in order to increase sales. So we've been pretty steady, not quite break even. We expect that we will be by the end of this year, but we are again having active revenue and have since we've released this device.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that maybe the trick is to stay away from the hospitals and focus on those ambulatory centers.
It's true. There's a couple of challenges with that. Federal regulation, and probably due to lobby from the hospital association, they don't want to lose those patients. And so it's not something that's going to be achieved overnight. In terms of allowing the codes which are necessary for appropriate reimbursement for spinal surgeries, lumbar spine fusion operations, for example, to be done in ambulatory surgery centers.
You know, as we start to wind down here, the show is called Your Advantage Play, and Your Advantage Play is your killer strategy. So can you summarize in a couple of words, you have a sense about what your killer strategy is that makes you better than everybody else, that's going to make your company be successful?
Yeah, you know, we have a technology which is so far advanced compared to anything else that is on the market that it's a matter of seeing it and using it once and you are sold. In addition to that, we have a pipeline of products which rely on that same upstream advantage in a single patient use system, which makes all the other strategies essentially obsolete.
Well, you know, Jeff, I'll tell you, I salute you for leaving a successful career, for moving into the very, very rocky waters of entrepreneurship. It's very difficult. You're in a particularly difficult industry because of all the politics, the regulation, and all the different issues that exist. But you're managing to do it anyway, and you've raised a great amount of money. I mean, you have been successful in raising money and doing a good job with that. So for all those reasons, I would tell you that you're an advantage player, and I appreciate that and salute that greatly.
Thank you, Joel. And I appreciate your hearing me out and allowing me to be a participant in your podcast.
Well, listen, will you keep us posted on your progress?
I certainly will.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Well, listen, thank you for being a guest on our show, and we'll look forward to hearing from you in the future.
A pleasure.
You've been listening to Your Advantage Play with your host, Joel Block. To learn more about how to work with Joel and cultivate your own high-limit advantage plays, visit theadvantageplayer.com. Subscribe to Your Advantage Play wherever you get your podcasts.
How about a shout out and a huge thanks to our podcast show producer, David Wolf, and the team at Audavita Studios. Profit from the Inside wouldn't be possible without these wonderful professionals. To learn more or to find out how you can launch and produce your own podcast show, reach out to www.audavita.com. That's audivita.com.